Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Welcome to Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Today's guest embodies not just success, but service, innovation, and enduring impact. Richard Anderson, known to many as Rick Anderson, is the president and CEO of St. Luke's University Health Network. Rick has led the organization for 40-plus years, transforming it from a single Bethlehem hospital into a sprawling multi-campus health system with over $4 billion in annual revenue, as well as thousands of employees and deep roots in medical education and patient safety. But beyond the metrics, Rick is also a swimmer, a Steelers fan, a gardener, a student of history, a bird watcher, and a proud grandfather. We'll explore not just what he has built, but who he is, what he believes, and how his passions inform his leadership. Rick, it's an honor, and welcome to Trailblazers.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here and having an opportunity to talk to you and have a conversation.
Yes, I'm delighted you're here. Thank you so much. Rick, when did you first realize that you wanted to work in healthcare leadership, and what early experiences shaped you, would you say, as a leader?
Probably when I first had the thought of being in healthcare was in my years at the University of Illinois in Champaign, where I attended school and received my bachelor's degree. And some of my advisors and professors, as we were talking about what's the next step, what are you going to do? I competed at the Big Ten level in swimming, had a scholarship, athletic scholarship, paid for my education, and was on the varsity team. And you realized at some point, the coach would say, "What are you going to do when you leave?" And, you know, you had aspirations of swimming in the Big Ten championships and maybe going to the Olympics and things of that nature. And as you realize you're getting to the end of your swimming career, you said, "Yeah, what am I going to do?" You know, and so you'd started talking to people and they said, "You might be good in healthcare. You might be good doing this, that, and the other thing." And so then one thing led to another, and I applied to graduate school to get a master's degree, a master's in public health, at various schools, UCLA, Northwestern, University of Pittsburgh, because I'm originally from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
That's where I was born.
It explains the Steelers.
In that area.
Okay.
A small suburb. But people from Pittsburgh, when you ask them where they're from, you just say, "I'm from Pittsburgh."
Right.
If you say, I was born in a small town called McKeesport.
Oh.
And so if you in the Midwest and you say to people in the Midwest, they say, "Where are you from?" You say, "McKeesport." "Where is that?" You say, "Pittsburgh." They know.
Right. Yeah.
So it ended up just by happenstance, I was accepted at the University of Pittsburgh School of Public Health, and I went there for 2 years in those days, Master's of Public Health and Healthcare Administration. So I began my career at that point and onward and upward.
How did you start out then? I mean, when you graduated college, what did you end up becoming at first? Certainly you weren't a CEO right away, but soon thereafter, because you've spent 4-plus decades in the industry. So how did you start out?
Well, that was a new program, getting into healthcare administration. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you were told is you needed to have experience in healthcare in order to enroll in the School of Public Health. And when I got admitted, the then dean of the school, a very stern, what I thought older woman, said to me, "You're an experiment."
Oh, geez.
"You don't have any experience in healthcare, and we don't know whether you'll make it or not." And it was, as I said, a 2-year program. And she said, "We're trying you and another student. There was only 20 in the class, and we'll see how it goes." Well, it turns out many of the people that graduated with me, I think one dropped out of healthcare, and I am literally the last person standing.
Wow.
Everybody's gone. so I just started and I worked at a small outpatient clinic in the New Kensington area, which is around Pittsburgh. It was for United Mine Workers. And I got a nice view of what soft coal miners had to do to survive and live, and got a good exposure to you know, what goes on in the labor side of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
During summers, I also worked in the steel mills when I was in college. Very, you know, physically challenging, and it grounded me, and I understand what people have to do to make a living. It's not always easy. You don't sit behind a desk. You work with people that roll up their sleeves and get their fingernails dirty and expose themselves to health hazards and things like that. So I think that all that together during college, undergrad, and then going to graduate school, and then getting exposure to healthcare in the United Mine Workers Clinic in the New Kensington area, really, it grounded me.
Yeah.
It reminds me, reminds me of where I came from and what it's all about.
It sounds like it gave you a good perspective, but also a great foundation. Over your 40 years leading St. Luke's, specifically since 1985, right?
Correct.
Yeah. What are some of the most difficult pivots you've had to make, and what lessons did they leave you with?
Well, as you mature, when you're young, you think you don't
invincible.
Make mistakes. You don't think you make mistakes.
Right. Yeah.
And then what you learn is you do make mistakes, and you have to be mature enough to acknowledge that you made a mistake. Mm. And once you acknowledge that, then you can fix it, address it. And the same lesson applies to people you work with. Everybody makes mistakes, including me, and I make more than my share. And then acknowledging that when you do make the mistake, you say, it's a mistake, let's fix it. And you judge people the same way. They make mistakes, and you say, it's okay. Don't worry about making the decision. Just make the damn decision, and if it's wrong or it needs tweaked, if you will, adjusted, we'll fix it. And I think that's probably one of the most important things a leader can internalize, is that you are not perfect, and nobody expects you to be perfect. Whether that's the President of the United States, or you're running a restaurant, or in my dad's case, he ran a plumbing business, a small business, and you know, you make mistakes and you have to fix them.
Yeah.
And then people aren't afraid to make decisions, and then you can build that relationship with the person that they trust you, that you're not going to make fun of them or punish them. That's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
If they're honest mistakes, they're mistakes.
That allowance for a degree of latitude is can be quite empowering, it seems, you know.
Exactly.
And actually, St. Luke's was recognized by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as the number one health system in the nation for quality, safety, and patient experience. What does this mean to your organization and the overall community it serves? Which we talked a little bit about before, you know, getting on air, that, you know, this is, you guys are just great community partners. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, St. Luke's, over the last, I'd say since 07, 2007, has really began a journey on quality. We worked on it before. You always want to be good, because you take care of people. People come to you, and they literally put their lives in your hands. Whether you're doing surgery, whether you're taking care of their children, loved ones, and they expect that you're going to do a good job. And as I said earlier, people make mistakes. You know, healthcare is a personal journey, and sometimes mistakes are made. So what you want to try to do is, you can't be perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Right.
But you want to try to continue to improve and get better and better at what you do. And then when you do make mistakes, you acknowledge them. And the recent recognition by the Department of Health and Human Services, it's a recognition, and it's a snapshot in time, because things change. So when you look at all the public data and you analyze it, which they did over a period of a couple of years, St. Luke's consistently came up as the best. somebody might argue that they didn't give you an award. Those are semantics.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, when they looked at it in October 2025, and that's the last time they looked at it, we had the best public data for quality and safety. Does that mean we're the best in the country? At that point in time, we are. Mm-hmm. We were. That changes. But also, to add to what I just said, you get other awards. We just got recognized by an organization called Premier and Modern Healthcare and some other magazines as the number one or number two health system in the country. Mm. So we have 16 campuses with 23,000 employees.
Wow.
We're actually $5 billion, not to argue with my learned colleague here.
Sure.
We keep growing, and it's a big network with lots of people, lots of moving parts, and it's better to be on a list than not on a list.
Right.
We get recognized by Forbes for employment. Our employees like working at St. Luke's. We have a good culture.
Yeah.
So all those things, when you put them all together on a consistent basis over and over, it's a narrative. It reads as a story. You're always at or near the top.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're a football team, baseball team, basketball team, you can't always win every year. But if you're always in the top percentile or quartile, that's impressive.
And you know that you're doing something right, right?
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about that growth. The growth metrics are enormous, from one hospital to, you said, 16 hospital campuses.
16 campuses, yes.
16 campuses. 350 outpatient facilities. What core values, and let me just say $5 billion in revenue, what core values or guiding principles have you held on to throughout that expansion?
Healthcare is personal.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to see your doctor, it's not about 23,000 employees. It's about you with your physician. And I don't mean you particularly, Melody, mm-hmm. but I mean you walk in and you want that focus on what's going on, what's not right, what can we help you with. And so you have that personal relationship with your physician and your nurses and your other people.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to keep it personal. It's not how big you are. It's not how important and impressive the technology is. It's what, if I'm the physician, or what can I do to help get things back on track from your health? And if you're the patient, you want that physician or that caregiver to pay attention to you and treat you like you want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you treat other people like you want to be treated. If you're doing something, and take it away from the patient for a second, if you're doing something that's not appropriate, how about telling me?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that I need to stop or what doing or need to improve? Treat other people like you want to be treated. Just tell me.
Yeah.
Don't expect that the person is going to understand that things aren't going well. Just sit down, have a respectful conversation, and tell them. And that's part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be yelled at. You don't want to be belittled. You don't want to be mocked. We're not perfect, and it doesn't always go on. But our employees tell us they love to work at St. Luke's because of that culture, that aspect. So that'd be answer your question. Treat other people like you want to be treated. And don't forget, healthcare is personal.
Mm-hmm. And that growth happens then organically because your employees are happy. The patients are then happy because they're getting that personal touch. So, makes sense.
And you get better when you know what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Not what you did right.
Right.
You know, you could have done thus or that or whatever, and we listen.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be defensive.
Can learn from them with mistakes, yeah. Sure. Switching gears here for a minute, let's talk about who you are personally. You're from Pittsburgh, a big Steelers fan, and you were a swimmer in college. How have those personal roots, sports, competition, and community shaped your leadership style, would you say?
Well, you learn whether it's, you know, I worked with my father as a plumber. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't a plumber, but I was his helper.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn that you have to work hard and things don't always go well. Same with a sport.
Mm-hmm.
You don't win every race. You don't always do the correct thing in a race. So what do? The next day you go back to practice and you work on whatever skill set you need to develop in order to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a gift. The gift was I didn't always win. I didn't grow up at a country club or, you know, on a golf course. And that's not meant in any way to disparage people who have those advantages.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up that you'd get knocked down. And as my mom always used to say to me, Richard, she called me Richard, it's not always how many times you get knocked down, it's how often you get up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get knocked down, you have to get up. So if you don't win a race, you go back to practice and you try to develop whatever skill, the fitness level, the technique, whatever it is that you need to do to get better. And you go back, swim the race, and sometimes you don't win again. What do? You go back and you practice. You're knocked down, you get back up. In our lives, we all get knocked down. And the measure of a success is, it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how often you get back up.
Yeah.
We have health issues, economic issues, family issues, you name it. You open the closet, sometimes, and lots of things fall out, and those are what you call life's problems. And
yeah.
So you have to know how to address them and fix them. You got to fix it.
Yeah. And sometimes the true measure of success comes from how you respond to failure. Exactly. You know, you never know what you're going to come up against, but how you respond to it makes all the difference.
Correct.
Now, personally, you're vested in the well-being of the community and leading the organization to strive for excellence in serving the greater good. In fact, St. Luke's, I found, consistently receives straight A's and 5 stars for safety. And as a nonprofit organization, St. Luke's earned an A grade for the 26-27 Lone, am I saying that right? Hospitals Index for Social Responsibility, actually placing it among the top health systems nationally for overall commitment to health equity, value, and outcomes. How do these accolades matter, and why are the community accolades so important? You guys show up as fantastic community partners. Why is that so important, and why is that so much a part of your culture?
You know, for the uninformed, to answer your question, mm-hmm. for the uninformed, sure. mm-hmm. there are many critics in the community, which do not bother me. As I said, you get better from hearing what you could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many people say healthcare is big business. It is, but it's still personal.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people will say they're building this building and that building and they're expanding. And basically, we grow based on the community's response to our services. So when we get these awards from the Lown, it's spelled L-O-W-N, but they say it
Lown. Okay.
People forget that we, as healthcare not-for-profit does not mean you don't make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a church, you're in the Boy Scouts, you're in a homeless shelter, you have to bring in more money than you spend or you go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
So the responsibility that we have as leaders, physicians, and other caregivers is you have to be able to generate income to support the salaries, the equipment, and so forth and so on. The Lowndes Institute measures what you give away, which we have to do, free care to the community and how we respond to that giving care away. We give away, which we should, it's not a complaint, over $450 million a year in free care.
Wow.
To people who don't have the resources to take care of themselves. And I say resources, money. They don't have access.
Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to take care of those people, not only as a healthcare provider, but because the law says you're not for profit and you have to give a certain amount away. Actually, it's 10% of your revenue you have to give away. You're required by the IRS.
Mm.
And so you file those papers, and the Lowndes Institute, it's public data, picks all that up from, there's probably 4,700 healthcare systems in the United States, systems and hospitals, systems and or hospitals. And they look at all that data and they sort, sift it and decide who falls out at the beginning with different criteria. And so we don't solicit that. It's not a volunteer thing. They look at it, and we always fall out as doing the right thing and giving that away. And it really fractures me, actually pisses me off, when some of these critics out there don't have the facts and they say that we're just big business and we don't do anything for the community. That's crazy. We're the biggest employer in the region. Mm-hmm. We give people income, they earn it. They spend it back in the community. And we also give services away and we take care of people. Mm-hmm. So when these, I call them loudmouths, start popping off with no facts and no information, criticizing our doctors and our nurses and our other caregivers, those are cheap shots. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're talking about. It is big business, but it employs a lot of people, and it's a huge economic engine. In our Lehigh Valley, healthcare is the biggest employer. Mm-hmm. It's not manufacturing.
That's
steel
correct.
Companies are gone. Mm-hmm. And you don't pay taxes. Well, we don't pay real estate taxes, but we pay wage taxes. Our employees do. Mm-hmm. And we provide all kind of economic benefit for the community with jobs. So it's a really important business. And in this country, there are 20 million healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. 20 million. That's huge. It's a $5 trillion business, healthcare. Mm. It's big. And if you measure that by gross national product, like the United States is the biggest, China's second, and third, I don't know whether it's Germany or France, healthcare is third with $5 trillion as far as an economy. It's huge. It's big. And if we didn't have our healthcare, our citizens would not be healthy. They can criticize America all they want. You know, and I'm a flag waving patriot. I'm a veteran. Healthcare, we take care. The United States takes care of its people. It's not perfect, but they do it better than anybody else in the world.
Let's talk a little bit about how you're actually training some of that talent pipeline, so to speak, of healthcare workers. You've led St. Luke's Medical initiatives, partnering with Temple University's Lewis Katz School of Medicine, sustaining the School of Nursing, and most recently, St. Luke's College of Health Sciences. How important is training new health professionals right here in the community, and what's your vision for that pipeline?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
We also, I would add to your list, we have the oldest continuous operating school of nursing in the country.
Wow.
So we train nurses. And right now, nursing is probably 90% women and 10% men. And healthcare at St. Luke's, 80% of our workforce are women. Hmm. And then we have our medical school. And the enrollment there, we have a four-year program with Temple University. It's a regional campus, but we've been graduating medical school physicians, MDs. Hmm. And what happens is they come in, there's 40, right now there's 40 in a class, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, so 160 a year. Wow. And we graduate 40 a year. I would bet we've graduated, and don't hold me to this number, 600 physicians.
Oh, wow.
New physicians that we've put into this economy. And most of them stay here. And that's why our healthcare in this valley is so good. Because we're turning out physicians, and to complement, we call that undergraduate school, med school. It's really not. It's after college. But you have med school, so that's undergraduate. Then we have residencies that are after med school, 4 years, another 4, 5, or 6 years. Hmm. We have 500 students in that. So we're turning out physicians. While technically you're a physician after 4 years of med school, but you've got to go to a residency.
Right.
So it takes a doctor 10 years, 4 years of med school, 5 years, whatever, sometimes even more, 7 years, to learn the finer art or skill set science of being a true physician, cardiologist, cardiac surgeon, general surgeon, obstetrician, dermatology. I mean, these programs are not easy to get into, and they're so competitive. Mm-hmm. So what St. Luke's has done is it's put a lot of people with higher education, more earning power, that have chosen to stay in the Valley and raise their families, spend their lives and their careers. It's probably one of the better things that St. Luke's has brought is the medical education component, and now our College of Health, which just started. We've got the full gamut: nurses, physicians, and other health specialties that, you know, people that ultrasound techs and radiology techs, and the school's oversubscribed.
Mm-hmm.
People want to go into healthcare.
Yeah. And it's best, it seems like it's a best practice example for an education and talent supply initiative that really every employer should be implementing.
We're fortunate.
What innovations, because there's so many things happening right now in healthcare as far as, you know, the dawn of AI and all the innovation and the technology. What innovations, technological, procedural, or organizational, do you believe have to date made the biggest impact on patient safety, but also will like, what are you most excited about in that space?
Let me back up a sec.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare is, it's trendy.
Mm-hmm.
You know how everybody's talking about AI, mm-hmm. AI this and AI that. And I'm not saying it's not important, but like, I'm sick of hearing about it. You know, we probably have 55 programs that we use for AI. For example, some of our basic radiology studies are initially read by programs in AI. That doesn't mean the radiologists don't look at them. Mm-hmm. They do. But that shortens the time that you can get the results of your test. And then there's AI in different areas. I'm not saying that's not important. But what we do genetic testing.
Mm.
And genetic testing is important for some people because it will predict sometimes the probability maybe of a patient getting breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been doing that here for probably 4.5 years.
Mm.
And we're enrolling people in this genetic testing program. And we have to enroll 100,000 people. And we're not charging people to get enrolled. And you can, you know, I have a grandson. Mm-hmm. And I can get that test, and it can determine certain hereditary conditions I might have that could be passed on to him through my daughter and her son. And people have the availability of that. I think that's really an exciting development as it is more and more refined and understood, understanding what the potential is for developing certain genetic diseases. That's a pretty big deal.
And it's laying the groundwork for really great outcomes, you know?
Yeah, and you can be prepared to deal with it and understand it. And sometimes you can by certain health practices. What are they? Don't smoke. It's terrible to smoke.
Yeah.
You know, don't drink. Alcohol is not good for you, despite what some of the people say. You know, an occasional drink, that's different. But, you know, there are some, basic and nutritional habits. It's what some of our parents taught us. You know, eat your vegetables and have some roughage and do the right things and have a good diet and things like that. That can all help, as you know, about those genetic issues that you may develop.
Rick, looking ahead, what are your hopes and goals for St. Luke's over the next 5 to 10 years? And what legacy would you like to leave beyond the awards and the campuses?
5 years is probably as far ahead as I'm able to look.
Fair, sure.
Healthcare is ever-changing,
mm-hmm.
With technology and with training and the educational aspects of it. And I would say to continue to improve on an already superb quality program, to stay focused on what's current in healthcare and providing the care, making sure that our patients have access to care without waiting for 5 months for a dermatologist. Use that as an example, concerned sometimes being too exposed to the sun and they have a spot and they want to see a dermatologist. we've added dermatology and trying to get people in, using that as an example, making sure our patients can get in to see their physician quickly at a convenient place, and they don't have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be really important, so we keep refining it. That's demonstrated, and we recently partnered with the Grandview Health System down in Sellersville, and that's expanded our reach, meaning ability to take care of more patients in Middle Bucks and Upper Bucks County, and making things better every day. So that's probably the really important thing. And as far as having a legacy, just have somebody say about St. Luke's, not me. Boy, that's where I want to go when I have a health problem.
Yeah.
That makes me smile. If I walk down the street in Bethlehem, Easton, Allentown, and somebody asks the question of another person, hey, I don't feel good, where should I go? Go to St. Luke's. That's when I smile.
Any advice for leaders, other leaders?
Acknowledge your mistakes. Work with people that respect you, and you have to give that respect back. And you'll be a success, and treat other people like you want to be treated. That's the bottom line. Nobody's perfect.
Sage advice. Rick, you've been so successful from a organizational perspective, an example for success in leadership. How would you define success?
Having a good family life, having good health, enjoying going to work. You know, I've always told my daughter, if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. So if I said to you, I love coming to work every day, that's not true. You know, when I was 20, 25, did I always like going to work? No. When I'm, in my 60s and 70s, do I like coming to work every day? No. But I like coming to work more often than I don't. And I enjoy fixing things, solving problems, trying to make the organization better. So knowing that I made a difference and helped build and make things better, that's probably my definition of success. And then enjoying the health that I can come to work every day and climb the stairs. You know, I can go swim, exercise. All those factors are success.
Impact and legacy. Rick, thank you for sharing this rich journey from your early days as a college swimmer and sports fan to 40 years of steady ethical leadership to nurturing ideas, staff, and patient trust. It's rare to see someone both visionary, rooted, ambitious, and compassionate. To our listeners, may Rick's story remind you that leadership isn't earned overnight. It grows through decades of small choices, steady service, and a fierce commitment to values. Until next time on Trailblazers, keep building what matters with heart, integrity, and courage. Thanks so much, Rick.
You're welcome.